All right. Could we give a warm welcome to Jovan, who's going to be talking about async Rust in Godot 4.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. I will talk to you about async Rust in Godot 4, which I implemented for the Godot Rust bindings. Briefly about myself, I have been tinkering with Rust since 2018, then started doing professionally Rust in 2021, started contributing to the Godot Rust bindings around the Godot 4 rewrite of the bindings, and then joined as a Godot Rust maintainer in 2025. The goals of this project were to enable async Rust code in Godot, because people were asking about that a lot. We wanted to keep the overhead to an absolute minimum and not include a lot of additional dependencies. And we wanted very similar behavior to what people were used to in GDScript. First, we need to look at async in GDScript. So how async works in GDScript is that you define a signal somewhere, and when you await that signal, the function implicitly gets turned into an async function. And then it returns something that's called a function state. It's internal to the engine. But from that, the engine knows that it's an async function, and you can await that function again. Or you just not await it, and it will just run in the background. The signals drive the await points. So as soon as the signal fires, the async function gets started again and continues. Here you can see how it works from a callers perspective. You await the async function, and then at some point you get a result. Signals in Godot are defined like this. You just have a signal name and a number of arguments with their types if you want. And when you want to emit a signal, you just call self and then the signal and emit. And in the engine, this gets unrolled basically into a for loop, and it just goes all over all the subscribers to that signal and calls them just in that loop. In Godot, the execution order is a bit important for later. So you have your main loop. The main loop updates your game. It does the physics update. And in the end, it drains all the deferred tasks. Deferred tasks are basically functions or closures in Rust that get called and are stored somewhere in the engine, and then it just runs them to completion until there are no deferred tasks left anymore. Okay, let's look at async in Rust. In Rust, the important part for async is the future trait. It's defined like this. You have an output associated type, and you have one function to poll the future. The poll function receives a context, and it returns a return value of poll that tells whoever polled it if it's ready or not. We usually define async functions like this, so you don't really have to implement the future trait yourself, but you could if you want to. Just a little bit of an overview of how the async flow is then executed. Someone polls the future receives the context, has to call a function waker on the context, which gives the future a waker, and the waker can then be called with waker wake and tell whoever created this waker to wake up the future. And that should, in the end, then trigger a future poll again. So, initially, I wrote a proof of concept that we can do this in the engine. And the idea was that you have some Rust function, and you call a function of the bindings. In this case, I called it Godot task. And it gets some async code and executes that to completion, asynchronously, obviously. For that, we needed a waker. As I just outlined, we need a waker that we can pass to the future. In this case, we put a runtime index there because we need to store the future somewhere. Otherwise, we can't access it when the signal fires or when we get woken up. So we just store the async runtime in a static. It's basically just a vector of these futures. And we created a Godot task function where we assign or we add the future to the runtime and store the index, create a new waker, and just wake it up, just start polling the future. The waker itself looks like this. First, we get a clone of the waker and put it in a context. That's just so we can pass it to the future. We get the task from the runtime, handle it if it shouldn't be there for some reason. Then we poll the future, and in the end, we check if the future is ready. If it's still pending, we do nothing. If it's ready, we just clear the task. The runtime doesn't have to care about it anymore. But the second part, as I outlined in the beginning, is we also want the same behavior as in Godot, so we want to be able to await signals. So we need a signal future. The signal future is basically taking the return value and stores it, and it needs to store the waker so it can wake up as soon as the signal fires. The poll function then just gets the state, checks if we have a result. If we got a result, we return poll ready. And if we got no result, we just store the waker for later so we can wake up once we receive the signal. So when we create this future, we pass in a signal. The signal also creates the state, initializes everything, and creates a callback function that can be passed to the engine as soon as the signal fires. This will only be executed once, so we don't have to worry about being called over and over again, because signals can fire more than once. And then we can just return that to whoever created the future. Internally, when the signal fires, we just have to lock the state. We wake up, or we get the waker, and we replace our return value from the signal into our state. If we have a waker, we wake it up, and that's it. So basically, we are done now. We can call Godot task, we can pass some async code to it, and we can run our async code. It will be executed by the engine. Are we really done? No, obviously not. There were a bunch of challenges along the way. So it worked, but there were a lot of things that people complained about and that we discovered didn't work quite so well. So the first challenge that we faced was there are some async libraries that don't like to be polled right away. As I showed, we just create the future and we poll it right away. And some futures want to do some setup before they get polled for the first time. So we shouldn't just poll on the same call stack as we created the future. So the question is, how can we poll later? In Godot, that's actually quite easy. We just start polling the future in a deferred Godot callable. The second challenge was that signals can be emitted on any thread they want to. So as I showed before, it's synchronous code, but the signal emit function can be called on any thread you want, and it will call all your signal subscribers on that thread as well. Signal arguments are not necessarily thread safe, so they also will move across threads, which is not ideal. The solution to that is also Godot deferred calls, because they always run on the main thread, as I showed before. They run in the main loop, and they will always be moved back to the main thread. To make this a little bit less error-prone, because we would move the futures between the threads if you start Godot task on a different thread, we restricted the Godot task function to the main thread, so you only can spawn new tasks on the main thread. And then we solve both of these problems. This is how it looks like when we make some changes to the proof of concept. So basically, the waker no longer just wakes up the future, but it creates a callable, which then calls a poll future function, which does a bit, little bit of additional stuff that I couldn't fit on here. And we just tell the engine to call this deferred, so it will do it in the end of the main loop. And we assert that the main function, the Godot task function, is always called on the main thread. And if that's not the case, we panic. This is also part of the documentation, so you should be careful how you call the Godot task function. Challenge three, objects from Godot are neither send or sync. So as I already mentioned, many of the types are not thread safe. But since you can emit the signal on any thread, we maybe move this signal's argument over the threads, which is not ideal. Most of the why they are not thread safe is because most of the objects are manually managed or ref counted. But even if they are ref counted, we have no idea how many people are currently having access to them, and they could write and read to them. So it's a bit of a headache, and it's not really something that we have solved yet. So thread safety is still a bit of a pain. So we solve this by introducing this trait, dynamic send. And it's basically an unsafe trait. The implementer has to guarantee that this function, extract if safe, is returns none if the value that it's wrapping was not sent when it was created. Otherwise, we can return sum and give out the value. So we created this type, thread confined. It accepts a generic value inside. And basically, when we want to access the signal argument, we check if we are still on the thread that the signal argument was created on. And if not, we do not return it. This causes a drop and, unfortunately, a leak. But we decided that this is the best option to handle it, because we cannot drop the value if it's not thread safe. And then challenge four. Signal objects can be freed at any time. So since most of the objects that emit signals are manually managed, they can be just freed whenever you want, and your future can still be hanging around, and then you have a dangling future. It's not really a problem. You just leak some memory because the future will never complete. Some people didn't like this, which is understandable. So we had to come up with a solution, and the solution for that was tracking when signal closures are dropped. So we mark the future when the callback closure is dropped and resolve the future as an error when it's getting polled the next time. Around that, we added a signal future wrapper. So we have two futures now, the failable signal future, which will return an error, and the signal future, which just panics. So you can choose whatever you want to use. You have this trade-off. There are a couple of things that we also did that I couldn't really fit into here. We catch panics, obviously, in the async code. Otherwise, it would just break your synchronous code at any given point. We kind of have this future slot state machine that checks if the future is still active or if it's currently polled and so on. It's, yeah, not that important, but it wasn't really in the proof of concept. Then we also have support for nested tasks. So in the proof of concept, you couldn't really create tasks inside of tasks. That's now possible. And some naming changed, So it's not what you have seen in the proof of concept anymore. Some of the naming changed. Yeah, this is an overview over the project. If you want to see more, you can see the full implementation in our project on GitHub. You can also just check out the repository or the project page. And that's it. Thank you very much.
So we have a question up front.
First of all, thank you, because I gave up on Rust for Godot because I couldn't connect to signals. So thanks for fixing that. And second question, does Godot, or like the engine with Godot script, also leak memory if nothing calls my async function anymore? Or do they have a solution for that with their garbage collector?
No, I can't. I checked it at the time. And as far as I remember, they have basically the same problem.
Any other questions? Oh, let's just probably go on.
Thank you. Are there performance implications of running every poll on the main thread that you've seen?
If you are planning on like having your futures running concurrently, it's having a performance implication. I would say in Godot, most of the time, async code runs on the main thread anyway, because people are using threads very rarely, and if they do, they don't use async code in them.
Any more questions? No? Okay. Thank you very, very much.